Hello and welcome. This week's programme is our 200th episode of Inside Education. It is also the last programme of 2014. At this time of the year, many of us begin to think back on the year just gone and look forward to the year ahead. And this week on Inside Education, we are looking back on education in Ireland in 2014 and looking ahead to 2015. One publication that is indispensable for such a review is the 8th edition of Education Matters, which was launched on the 9th of December by the Minister for Education and Skills, Jan O'Sullivan. The yearbook is a review of 2014 and a guide to 2015, and this year it was edited by Dr. Tony Hall of NUI Galway. It includes a wide range of contributions from people such as Sean O'Fowlew, the General Secretary of the Department of Education and Skills, Professor Noreen Hayes from DIT on Early Childhood, Brian Mooney, Guidance Counsellor and Education Analyst, and Clive Byrne, the Director of the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals. Education Matters is supported by NUI Galway, and I'm pleased to be joined on the programme this week by Dr. Mary Fleming, who is Head of the School of Education at NUI Galway, to help us look back at 2014 and ahead to 2015. Mary's research interests are areas are concerned with the dynamics of teaching and learning within the professional practice setting and leadership management developments within educational organisations. I began by asking Mary what stood out for her in this year's Education Matters Handbook.
Well, what stood out for me in Education Matters Handbook was the plethora of changes that are happening in the system at all levels, like from early childhood straight into primary to post-primary, up on into the recent FET strategy, that's the Further Education and Training strategy that was announced throughout the year. This has huge implications, I think, for how we consider education as a topic, as an area of interest as we move into 2015.
So these are the areas of reform that are in the environment. So if we take one of them at a time, which one would you like to begin with?
Well, in terms of reform, I suppose the one that links every level is probably the changes in teacher education. And the fact that initial teacher education is becoming to the fore in relation to leading out the new thinking in terms of teaching and learning in all classrooms, but even from, you know, early childhood right through. Early childhood practitioners are starting to, you know, be accredited for their practice, be accredited for their professionalism. And likewise, we've always had primary and post-primary teacher education, but the FET teacher education is also starting to develop credibility and probably a sustainable sort of existence within the system.
If we just focus in, Mary, first of all, on the early childhood education, because this is an area where traditionally, you know, there were obviously some very well qualified people working in the sector, but there were also people who had no qualifications at all. That's beginning to change now and requirements are being set down, isn't that right?
Yes, and the Minister has announced the, you know, quality assurance platform from which that is going to lead the change, for want of a better way of putting it. In other words, there's going to be a quality support service, which is similar to an inspectorate in the system that's going to quality assure the learning that the children are going to have in early childhood.
And I suppose one of the reasons that the Minister is taking an interest in this area is because the government is paying for a year of early childhood education now.
Yeah, and possibly 2 years in the near future. So, yes, it's going to be part of the system. So a child from the age of three will be within the, you know, as they learn, as they go through life, the Department of Education will have input into the type of learning and the experiences of learning they're going to have and the focus of the learning.
And you mentioned then that there was also changes in the primary and post-primary teacher education provision. And I suppose one of the changes that came in 2014 is that the old HDIP at post-primary level has gone from 1 year to 2 years. What are the implications, or what are the reasons even for that?
Well, the reasons for that really emerged from the PISA report in 2009 and the literacy and numeracy, or Ireland's place from how much they had fallen down in terms of the standards of literacy and numeracy in second level students. And also it was muted from about 2002 in a Burke report that indicated that there should, you know, the postgraduate qualification should be of longer duration with a greater emphasis on the practice, the school placement and the practice of teaching in the classroom. As regards the implications for this is that, okay, no longer can we talk about the dip. We're talking about a professional master's qualification, which is a full master's level qualification. So all our graduate teachers entering the workplace from 2017 or 2016 will be asked a master's level qualification. And that's a big change. So now all level 9 qualifications our teachers will have as they go into the classroom. In terms of another change, it's going to have big implications for schools in that the time of the pre-service teacher in school is going to be longer. They're going to have a wider depth and breadth of experience of the school before they go into their induction year. And that will have also implications for the partnership approach to the provision of pre-service teacher education in the country at both levels, primary and post-primary.
Because in the past, Mary, very often people are familiar with the fact that post-primary teachers who are doing the dip might be in the school on a Monday and a Friday. But that's beginning to change now because sometimes they're actually going out on block placements to schools.
Yes, now we ourselves run a block placement sort of scheme. Our programme is block. Others, you know, HEIs have more sequential type of models. But one of the criteria for the placement is that every student has to experience 10 weeks placement within the 2 years in schools. And, you know, that will mean that a pre-service teacher will be in the school for a full 10 weeks, you know, of their course. And that's a huge amount of time.
And it'll have an impact on the schools as well because, you know, in the past they could be given teaching duties that were ongoing from week to week, whereas that's more difficult now.
Well, it's good and bad in that, okay, their teaching duties are going to be more, probably haphazard for want of a better way of putting it, in that they'll have a variety of teaching duties and they'll be exposed to a variety of situations. But as you say, they're in the schools for blocks rather than on a continuous basis.
And at primary level, Mary, there's a change where the 18-month diploma has now become a 2-year professional master's as well.
Yes, and that again has implications for schools and the providers. But the only good thing around that is all graduates will be still graduating around the time of jobs, around the June, July time. The 2 years for the primary will be starting, with the academic year around September.
Yeah, I can certainly say that it was always a problem for us when one group came in January or February of a year because it meant that workloads were unbalanced for the second part of the year, or for the two parts.
And it did cause a bit of upset in the system.
Another initiative this year, Mary, was the establishment of SULIS, the new Further Education and Training Authority. What are the implications of that, do you think?
Very interesting in that SULIS was tasked with first devising what's called a Further Education Training Strategy. And they have just released that strategy there in the last 3 months. That really, really is giving out the message that now what's emerging is possibly a fourth pillar, or even fifth pillar if you include early childhood, primary, post-primary, third level, and now FET as a pillar of education provision in the country. So this pillar of education provision is really, really starting to emerge and develop its identity. And it will include the apprenticeships, the different further education courses that students participate in, and starts to build, for want of a better word, credibility into that sector, which was in the past there on the side but never having a describable identity or purpose.
And it seems as if one of the priorities for the department is to ease the transition from the further education sector for students at that sector into the higher education sector.
Yeah, and to provide a platform for these students who, you know, might take longer in working through the system, might take longer in deciding on where they want to go in life, and to provide that opportunity a little bit later in life for them, and to ease, as you said, the transition into higher education.
At the top of the education system this year, there was a change when Minister Rory Quinn was replaced by the new Minister for Education and Skills, Jan O'Sullivan. What do you think are the implications of that transition?
I'd say the implications are that, okay, the obvious implication is that we've a different person with different personality, different way of doing the business. Implications in terms of strategy, I'm encouraged by the fact that she still is going to push or engage with the new junior cycle and, you know, try and roll that out for the betterment of the students of the future. I'm encouraged by the fact that she has three areas of interest that she's going to pursue in 2015, which are the DESH, review of DESH schools, that's the delivering educational equality of opportunity for students in schools. I like the idea that she's going to look at the apprenticeship structure, and I also like the idea that she's starting to work with the early childhood and building quality assurance into that. So in terms of implications for us as educationalists, I would say it will be a new way of leading the change into 2015. I don't know what the new way will be, but I'm hoping and I'm quite confident that the new junior cycle will roll out in whatever form or mutation that might take.
But it looks as if the industrial action is going to continue for at least one other day in January anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably what will happen, and hopefully on foot of that, that maybe some common ground for negotiation will emerge. I'm really, really hopeful about that, because I think if this doesn't happen, we've lost a huge opportunity for change in second level provision.
And where do you think the space is? Because the minister says she has moved, and the teachers say, well, they want her to move some more, but she kind of says, well, she's moved far enough, it's their turn now.
Possibly the space might be around generating a discussion around how the cross-moderation or the moderation of the assessment of the student's work is going to be carried out. There's very little discussion about that in the media, or even I have heard very little discussion around, you know, the fact that you have a teacher in a school and they have so many projects coming out of their classroom. Even if they could even come up with that 50% of those projects go to another teacher, some sort of process whereby there's sharing of the correction load, or some sort of structure in the background whereby the projects go into a common area and teachers correct the projects, but in particular, maybe not their own, but something that would work, whereby, you know, the interests of both groups are satisfied. In other words, that the projects are corrected by practicing teachers on the ground that can give solid feedback or feedback to the students on their progress.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting in the Education Matters yearbook for 2014 that Brian Mooney was writing, and he said, we have only to look at the debacle recently exposed relating to amendments to penalty points within the Garda Síochána to see what happens when systems become open to lobbying on behalf of colleagues or anyone at all. So he's quite definitively supportive of the teachers and the fact that really exams should be corrected anonymously.
And to tell you the honest truth, I think if part of that would be that it would have to be evidence-based. That the assignment structures, the whole process needs to be, you know, tight in terms of what's expected of the students, what's the evidence that it needs to be presented by the pupil, I'm saying, in terms of the project they do, what the type of project deserves an A, what type of project deserves a B, etc., etc. And that is quite structured in terms of the required levels of attainment.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. My guest on the programme this week is Dr. Mary Fleming from NUI Galway, who is helping me look back at the world of Irish education in 2014 and look ahead to what lies in store for 2015. Mary, we mentioned Brian Mooney there. He also said when he was looking back at 2014 that one of the stories was the fact that Susie was a non-story in 2014. He congratulates Jacinta Stewart, who's the Chief Executive of City of Dublin Education and Training Board, and the team for having got everything right for students' grants this year.
And wasn't it fantastic that so many students got fixed up so early and without too much hassle? And it's actually a great example of where the system can respond to the need with, you know, proper resourcing and, you know, direction in terms of fixing ourselves. So I think, again, going back to the junior cycle, I think the junior cycle can be fixed if we have the interest and the willpower to do so.
You're over in Galway, Mary, and one of the topics that seems to be coming up for next year, or at some stage anyway in the future, is the review of the small schools in Ireland, that we have a much higher proportion of schools with under 100 students than most other similar countries. What do you think is going to be the outcome of that?
I don't know, but I like the idea of the federation of schools, whereby there's a sharing of resources, a sharing of administrative load, and that, you know, the students, the pupils, are given opportunity to have the full curriculum, even if they are in a small school of 30, 40, 50 students, or even less. So in other words, that schools are clubbing together, like what is described in the handbook around the Netherlands, where you have a federation of schools working together to deliver a curriculum that meets the needs of the students in the area.
So maybe you could have one principal that would be a principal of a number of schools.
With a number of schools and one admin, one admin structure, one, you know, support structure in terms of a resource, special needs, and different expertise, for example, in science, languages, and all the different curricular elements that should be in the primary schools.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, even the very fact that there's such technology available, like Skype and so on, it's very easy for schools to keep in contact with each other now, even if the principal wasn't on the ground where he or she was needed at a particular moment.
Exactly, and the different, facilities that are there within ICT to facilitate that type of efficiency without the person having to be there face-to-face.
Another topic that's kind of ongoing and has been ongoing for the last number of years is the literacy and numeracy strategy. Was there any particular changes or revelations or innovations this year on that, Mary?
I liked my colleague's article there, Brenda McMahon's article, on the literacy and numeracy strategy and how it's evolving in the schools and the difference it's making to schools, and how schools have embraced the whole literacy planning and the whole development around it, and how they have literacy champions in the school, and they're rolling out different strategies for different related to different outcomes in their plans. I like the idea that, you know, literacy is becoming, you know, probably the literacy development is becoming the practice of every classroom teacher, not just the English teacher's remit. And what is emerging from the whole area is this concept of disciplinary literacy, whereby, as well as building literacy within, say, the English language, we're building literacy around the different disciplines, be it maths literacy, be it geography literacy, be it language literacies, or whatever it is, science literacies. In other words, the students are developing a language in relation to the subject, and that has to develop their depth of learning within the different subjects, particularly in post-primary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things, because in the past, people always thought, well, you learn to read in primary school and then you're kind of, you know, you don't need to do any more learning to read when you're in post-primary school. Whereas I think this whole approach to learning the disciplines of the various subjects and learning that language is one of the new emphases.
Yeah, and it's really good because then the students are becoming more confident in the subject and their discourse within their subject. Their disciplinary literacy and disciplinary skills are developing. I think it's a very positive outcome of the whole strategy.
Another voice that I thought wasn't as easy to hear this year was parents' voice, either at post-primary or at primary level. Now, maybe I'm mistaken, but what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but the parents it didn't actually emerge as a big, as you said, they were quieter this year, but yet they're quite effective. And I think possibly in 2015, they will be the group that we'll hear more about. They're starting to vocalise the importance of partnership, developing, you know, their role within the different sectors of the education system, particularly in early childhood and particularly in primary and post-primary. You know, their input into the decision-making processes that are happening. I particularly observed, probably a better word, their engagement with the junior cycle and how they voiced their opinion in relation to the recent industrial actions.
Yeah. And another area is the whole area of minority languages and particularly, you know, developing, say, competence in Chinese at post-primary level. Where does that stand at the moment, do you think?
Well, I see where Fidelma Healy-Ames has an article there on a pilot project that's rolling out in a group of primary and post-primary schools here in Galway around the development of Chinese as a language within the second level system. I don't know where it is, to give you a quick answer in terms of a whole system response. I say a lot will depend on how the Chinese economy develops and how the employment and, you know, prospects in that area develop into the future. But definitely new languages or minority languages, as you say, are starting to emerge in the curriculum. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, although another language story that was less positive this year was the English language schools, where we had some schools closing down suddenly and leaving students high and dry, having paid, you know, quite substantial fees to learn English in Ireland.
Yeah, and that's an awful pity, and it's a poor reflection on us as a nation that those schools, that actually happened, those students. And it's something that really, really needs to be tackled in terms of, again, quality assurance and accreditation.
Yeah, and I think there are some steps in mind. Steps in line for that. Yeah, and another area is the patronage of schools. This was a particular priority of Rory Quinn, increasing the choice of schools for parents, mm-hmm. particularly at primary level. How do you think the education system has responded to that, those reforms during 2014?
Well, I think the department have responded very actively to it. In terms of the system, I think the system are starting also to respond, like in terms of Educate Together and all the different patronages that are being, you know, the schools that are being built for the different patronages. I was particularly sort of surprised, for want of a better word, that Lekela, one of the Catholic trusts, actually were the people who got the new school, the second level school in Charlestown in Dublin. So, to answer your question, the system is possibly responding. It will take time. A change takes time. People's preferences and articulation of preferences have been sought by the different stakeholders. So, I would say, in time, there will be a change.
Yeah.
How the change emerges will depend on local interests, local engagement with the process. And there is still a sort of a benign sort of adherence to the old ways of schools and their formation here in Ireland.
Yeah, although I was looking at another story in the Education Matters yearbook where you report, I think it was a story actually from the Cork Examiner originally, where you talk about the fact that that the number of religious teachers in the system, now I'm not sure if it's primary and post-primary or if it's in total, but it's just as low as 80 now, whereas in 1970 there were 3,700 post-primary teachers in religious orders.
Yeah, Oh, yeah. Yes, it is actually gone right down. But the number of religious in schools, I'd say, like, will probably really, really be decimated in the next few years. But the trustees are doing very well. The trustee bodies are doing well. Kesht, the Kela, the different congregational bodies are starting to really, really get their governance structures in order. And at primary level, that's starting to emerge through the Department of Education strategy in relation to new primary schools and the different boards of management.
And speaking of new schools, there was talk of, at one stage at least, Waterford and Carlow ITs merging and becoming a technological university for the South East. But I'm not so sure now that that's...
I think that marriage is off. Yeah.
It looks like that, doesn't it? And it looks as if Tralee IT and Cork IT could actually overtake them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one in Dublin is pretty much secure as well, the DIT one.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And another group we haven't mentioned yet, or another body, is the Teaching Council. And I suppose one of the things I noticed from their announcements this year is they seem to be moving ahead quite strongly on CPD, Continuing Professional Development for Teachers.
Yes, that I'd say is their main point for movement on this year, or into 2015. I think by the end of 2015 we'll have a very good idea on how the CPD framework is going to develop for practicing teachers, whether it will mimic or mirror the type of framework that's there for other professional bodies such as doctors, whereby they have what are called clinical medical education points, whereby from CPD courses they gather points and they have to achieve a certain level of points rating per year to maintain their registration. So I don't know what the framework will look like. I know it probably will be flexible. It will probably be linked to each individual teacher's needs, and it will be a very interesting space for development, I would say, and will encompass all levels of the system, because part of the accreditation process will probably involve some of the HEIs.
Mary, we're coming near the end, and I wonder, can you just tell us a little bit about your own areas of interest in educational research?
Well, my primary area of interest, even though it's not as active as it should be, would probably be the leadership of change in schools, whereby I did my PhD on change and how it happens in schools and how it can happen in schools and what the role of leadership in that process. So that's where my primary area of interest is. But in more recent years, I've started to look more at the practice learning of teachers and how pre-service teachers in particular engage with the process of developing their professional learning approach, stance, and that transition from, you know, the more undergraduate level of learning into the professional level of learning and reflective practice and negotiating that terrain.
And that was Dr. Mary Fleming from NUI Galway. And that brings Inside Education to an end for this evening and for this year. You can listen to podcasts of 200 previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to Mary Fleming from NUI Galway and to Phyllis Mitchell, the driving force behind Education Matters, for their help on this week's programme. We'll be off air for the next 2 weeks, but look forward to returning in early January. I wish all our listeners a happy, prosperous and educational 2015. For now, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.